We have our guest on the line with us. It's Jerry Liepart from up in Connecticut. How's everything going?
Yeah, fine, James. Things up here in Connecticut are fine for the dog days of August. Had the perceived meteor showers out and about. Couldn't really see them. The sky was too hazy.
Yeah, well, so many of us live in this East Coast megalopolis. It seems to go from Boston down to D.C. It's hard to see the stars at night. Anyway, so I wanted to talk to you about this response that's been issued by NIST. People can go to total411.info or total911.info, and I've posted the link right to the Department of Commerce website. And I guess Dr. Judy Wood and yourself and everyone just got this response about a week ago. Is that right?
Yes, it, I guess probably closer to 2 weeks now, to be exact, James, that it has been issued, and we are in the within the time period allowed for taking an appeal. When you get a decision in any sort of legal law, be it administrative, as these proceedings are, or a court decision, you know, the first thing you do, of course, is take a look and see what the overall outcome is, whether, you know, it's favorable, unfavorable, or somewhere in between. And then after that, you, you know, you read it carefully and, in order to determine exactly what it's saying. Now, if you look at just the conclusion of the NIST response to Dr. Judy Wood's request for correction, you will see that it says that they are denying their her request, meaning, as they specifically say, that they are not going to retract their prior report on what caused the destruction of World Trade Center Twin Towers, WTC 1 and 2, and that instead they're just going to, you know, let that report stand. But then in reading the exact content of the three-page response, you get an entirely different impression. And in point of fact, the NIST response reveals significant inconsistencies as between the reasons why they say they are denying the request for correction on one hand and the rationale in support of maintaining the, you know, the status quo on the other. So basically, I think you know, any of us who are involved in the search for truth with respect to the events of 9/11 can actually take heart in what NIST has done. It really does provide a mechanism for continuing the formal proceedings to try to use legal and administrative process as one part in the overall effort to get the truth of 9/11 to come to the fore and to be registered in the overall public consciousness.
Sure, and it really, when you kind of read through it, as you said, it's almost like they're saying that it's not our job to explain the destruction of the World Trade Center. We were just told to explain how it might have started collapsing. They're not even really saying that it did collapse, or they're saying that they have to take that as a given, almost.
That's right.
You're reading it? Yeah.
They're just reiterating that they neither explained the event nor did, you know, at one point, you know, you think they're saying, you know, we didn't even try to explain the event, so what do you expect from us?
Yeah.
So it is extraordinary. Now, at another level, we know, James, that other than valiant efforts to is available to us, such as, for example, what we're doing right now. We have very little access to media, and we are up against the broadcast capacity of mainstream media that not only saturate the airwaves and the print media with whatever it is they want you to know, but they're doing it with an intensive application of psychological operations. They are working overtime to further implant and impress and imprint the official governmental conspiracy theory.
They're still trying to ignore that there's even a World Trade Center 7 that fell, even still today, to the casual viewer of television.
That's right. That has just fallen into the status of news blackout. You know, they will not say anything about it. It's such that, you know, we don't expect coverage of this development with NIST. We don't expect mainstream media coverage with any of the other legal proceedings that we have going on. And you know what, James? There's a good chance that even if we were at some point to succeed in some measurable way, I'm pretty convinced that no matter what, they are not going to, they meaning mainstream media,
mm-hmm.
are just simply not going to call attention to it, unless they absolutely have to. And about the only way that I can see that they will be forced to do this, if we in alternative media succeed in establishing ourselves as a full alternative and as a full competitor with and for mainstream media. I think we actually can do that. I think more and more people are realizing that they're really being misinformed, manipulated, and used as guinea pigs by mainstream media, who are using that wonderful resource of broadcast media, the ability to communicate via television, radio, etc., for nothing more than a way to get you to buy this, that, or the other product.
Yeah, and that's why we hope more and more people tune in to Revere Radio, which is listener-supported, and throw some money in the pot. So looking at this response they gave, this PDF, I wanted to focus some on, I guess it's on page 2, it's the first full paragraph.
And sure. I'll try
to just read it here for the audience, if I can make it all the way through. Let's see. In your supplement of March 29, you also assert that Applied Research Associates, one of the contractors involved in the investigation, has a, quote, significant, clear, and palpable conflict of interest that adversely affects the quality and the integrity of the work done by ARA for NIST, unquote. And then they go on to say, prior to award, each NIST WTC investigation contractor underwent a rigorous organizational conflict of interest analysis. As a result of the analysis, ARA was determined not to have an organizational conflict of interest. See, that's a passive voice, isn't it? They don't say who determined that. I'll just finish here. In addition, each contract contained a provision requiring the contractor to notify NIST immediately should any organizational conflict of interest arise during the course of the contract, and no such conflicts of interest were reported. Then they go on. You further claim that ARA is a significant manufacturer of directed energy weapons, indoor components thereof. Since there is no factual evidence to support this claim, NIST has no basis for accepting your proposed corrections to NCSTAR 1, which, of course, is their big report. So what did you think of that? That's something we talked about on this show before. What was your immediate reaction to it, and what do you think a couple weeks later?
Well, okay, my immediate reaction to it was that in looking at the language, you have to ask yourself, okay, well, what questions are they inviting me to ask? You also look at this language to see what, if any, admissions are they making. And thirdly, you look at this language and ask, what further questions can I ask, and or what information can I ask them to provide
mm-hmm.
to verify the claims that they are making in the letter. In other words, if you're used to, you know, legal language, you're basically asking, well, how can I use the process of discovery, meaning the use of written questions, or what we call interrogatories, or using written requests that they produce certain documents, you know, requests mm-hmm. for production of documents, in order to actually verify the claims that they are making there. For example, they say they went through some sort of process of determining whether conflicts of interest existed or not. Okay, well, what did you do? What did you see? What information did you consider? Give me copies of it.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. And ask who did it. It was probably like, you know, Anderson Consulting or some one of these other criminal firms that's been indicted in the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
my, you know, initial response. Mm-hmm. And that initial response, James, you know, each aspect of the three things that I mentioned all go to the issue of what your next steps ahead might be, you know, now that you've gotten this written response. Keep in mind that, you know, any sort of written response then serves as a baseline. And, you know, from this point forward, anything that NIST says about this can be reviewed for purposes of whether it is consistent or inconsistent with what they have said here. In other words, it provides a basis for, you know, making sure that what has been said here is true and correct.
Well, this request for correction process has been around for a few years now, 6 or 7 years. Has anyone else, you know, what has anyone else appealed or re-responded or re-requested to a reply like this?
As we're on tonight, James, I really don't know the answer, you know, to that question. And one reason why I don't know the answer to that question, of course, is that the request for correction arising under the Data Quality Act apply to all of the agencies of the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, our focus is you know, is highly specific. You know, we're just focused on one aspect of one agency, that is one document, namely NCSTAR 1, that comes within the scope of the Data Quality Act, that is issued by one branch of one agency of you know, the federal government. And what you know, James,
this is part of the Department of Commerce, and I guess every
correct.
Department has its own administrative procedures, so
that's
it's really
correct.
Hard to say for a new law.
Yeah.
Good point.
That's correct. So what we do know is that the three individuals that I represent, namely Ed Haas, and then Judy Wood, and then Morgan Reynolds, filed respectively the, you know, the first ever request for correction involving the report on what caused the destruction of the World Trade Center. So that's a fairly new development.
Yeah.
The very first one was filed just barely 6 months ago at the beginning of March. and then two of the three are still pending in the sense that NIST has not yet issued even an initial response to them. Judy Wood's request for correction was the first one that received a mandated written response.
Sure. Okay. So I thought we might go further into this Applied Research Associates issue. There was the supplement to the original request for correction, which basically, in case I guess there could be one or two people who don't know listening, Dr. Wood's original request for correction basically, you know, it's 40 or 50 pages, and it said that there is such an energy deficit given the dustification of the buildings that there's some kind of energy source here, and directed energy weapons obviously would be a candidate, and there's other specific evidence pointing towards that. And so this conflict of interest is about this firm, Applied Research Associates, which, if you look around on the web, they're a founding member of the Directed Energy Professionals Society. Just so right off the bat, that's a huge red flag. And what else do we know about them, and what do you make of this response?
Well, the response is very interesting because it does not deny the claim that ARA is a significant manufacturer or developer of directed energy weapons. It doesn't deny that claim. You know, and there's actually another approach that might have been taken with respect to Dr. Wood's assertion there, and it's noteworthy, Jane, for what this response from this does not say. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to assume that many of your listeners tonight are probably people who have some familiarity with the overall 9/11 truth movement.
Sure.
And that they will know that within the 9/11 truth movement, Dr. Judy Wood has both those who are keenly interested in and deeply supportive of her research and are amazed at the high quality of it and at her what you might call intuitive capacity combined with scientific expertise that has resulted in the formulation of the theory that directed energy weapons of some sort or another were a causal factor in the destruction of the World Trade Center. In other words, she has supporters for her theory, but she also has critics who are deeply and vehemently opposed to her idea and to her theory.
I'm sure a lot of listeners do know all that, and I guess just for those who don't know, I mean, there are counterintelligence agents in their patsies who don't want people to talk about how the buildings disintegrated, and that's kind of the short story.
Yeah, that's kind of the short story. And then among the critics, there are those who say, this theory is so ridiculous that, that it's that it has to be the work of, operatives. In other words, that this theory is bogus or that this theory is frivolous. Now, James, I can tell you this much. U.S. governmental agencies do get a lot of frivolous claims presented to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is not shocking. This is not news. People submit frivolous claims to governmental agencies, and they submit frivolous claims to courts. But what happens when a frivolous claim is presented to a governmental agency or to the court? I'll tell you what happens. The agency or the court says so.
Yeah.
And they don't mince words. And they, it's not personal. If you submit a frivolous claim to a federal governmental agency or to a court, you will be told in no uncertain terms that your claim is frivolous and it is hereby dismissed. Well, guess what, James?
They had no such response in there.
Now, this is a matter of public record, isn't it?
Indeed.
You pulled it up. You presented it to your listeners. You have let people know where they can access this information, namely
411.info, and also the Department of Commerce.
The missed response to Dr. Judy Wood is a reasoned response as far as it goes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But as a matter of fact, the limitation on the response is that it doesn't go quite far enough. It doesn't really answer the questions that Dr. Judy Wood raises. However, the strength of the response, in my opinion, James, is the extent to which that response acknowledges that they understand exactly what Dr. Wood is claiming. And not only do they understand exactly what Dr. Wood is claiming, they understand exactly who Dr. Wood says may have a responsibility for what actually happened that in turn creates a conflict of interest. They understand, and they said they understood, what Dr. Wood was claiming.
But did not
specifically deny the validity of it. They basically said, and you just read it on the air,
mm-hmm.
that with respect to ARA, no, you've got to provide us with some more information.
Well,
you know what? We will take them up on that.
That's great. That's great. And I put some links up on the page. Maybe we can go through some of that information about what ARA was up to. I mean, we have. Do you have these links in front of you, or?
Well, let's see. What's our time frame here, James?
What's your time frame?
Well, basically, I think I would like to. I think we're better off if we are concise.
Mm-hmm.
That if we give the listeners something specific that they can look at, but without trying to do the an entire analysis on the radio, and that for a couple of reasons. One, I'm not quite sure if it would be an effective way to communicate. Yeah, the information. And then secondly, I must say that I from a legal point of view, I'm quite comfortable in talking about the missed response because it is, after all, a matter of public record.
Sure, sure. No, I understand. You have to
be
close to the vest. Maybe after we let you go, I'll talk more freely. And anyway, it's just very interesting because,
I think I'd want to respond initially, though.
Sure.
And that is that let's give out the website or web page address from the ARA Applied Research Associates website. And the one I want to give out is www.ara.com/capabilities/defense.htm. And if you go to that page, it's noteworthy for having two columns of small thumbnail, actually they're a little bit larger than thumbnail size photographs.
Oh, okay.
And if you can go there, James, you'll see that the first photograph on the left hand side is a missile, and then to the right of that there are soldiers dressed up in biological chemical hazardous gear.
And And again, it's ARA.com/capability/defense.htm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Then right beneath that is a photograph of a building being turned to dust.
It's a big chunk of the building is just missing.
Yeah. And what
reminds me of Oklahoma City.
Well, it reminds me of the World Trade Center site. Look at the front part shows something that, yes, does look like Oklahoma City, but look in the back. There's a big column of a big plume of dust or debris.
Oh, down the street.
Down the street.
Wow. I didn't catch that the first time.
But yeah, look at that. That to me is astonishing.
That's very interesting.
James, that photograph, you know, that's too much. You see, and that's, you know, I'm speechless based on what that photograph reveals about RA's capabilities.
Yeah, we've talked about on the show before something called revelation of the method, and people might want to look up that phrase. It's kind of a side issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. It's very revealing, and you know what are they up to? I mean, maybe I'll just talk, and maybe you don't want to get in this, but you know they have other pages on there about prototypes, and you know where their facilities are. And I know if you look at their corporate documents, or even on their website, Albuquerque, New Mexico, right next to Los Alamos and all the testing grounds there.
Yeah, they're right next to Los Alamos. They're right next to the Directed Energy Professional Society, which is headquartered in Albuquerque. And they're right next to Kirtland Air Force Base, which is the hub of the Directed Energy Weapons System. They have what is called the Directed Energy Directorate, headquartered at Kirtland Air Force Base.
And you know where their main headquarters is in Albuquerque, but you know where their second biggest operation is? It's in Aberdeen, Maryland, right next to the Aberdeen Proving Grounds, where the U.S. Army tests all of their equipment.
That's right.
Their weapons.
ARA is basically, they are a weapons manufacturer. They are at the epicenter of the military-industrial complex.
And like it says in their name, they do research, and you see, looking, just clicking around their ARA.com website, prototyping is very big. In fact, their page is manufacturing/prototyping. So it sounds like they're doing a lot of the origination of these kinds of weapons, and then, you know, maybe then they hand it off to someone like Raytheon. At least that's what I'm thinking, and then it makes me wonder... Because this meshes with other hints that we see on 9/11 that, you know, what to a large degree, many of the weapons that directed energy weapons included that could have been used were in fact prototypes, and then ARA was sent in afterwards to do the research on what the prototypes were, and then they can go back and have their meetings and decide whether or not to go into mass production and manufacturing. So that's my rant. You don't have to comment on that if you don't want to.
But I won't comment on it, but I hope your listeners are listening carefully.
Okay. That's where I am. So how much longer do you and Dr. Wood have, or does Dr. Wood have, Judy Wood have to do this, to respond?
Well, the response is due within 30 days of the receipt of the letter. As a practical matter, what I usually advise clients is to count the 30 days from the date of the letter. That way, you know, you can't ever get into a controversy about whether you filed it on time or not. So, as you can see from the website, that the letter has a stamped date on it of July 27th. Now, I can tell you that it was not received until several days after that, but for purposes of the appeal, chances are it will be filed right about at the 28th to 29th day, dated from July 27th.
That should be very interesting. Maybe we'll have an update.
When we file, we will be able to, you know, make an announcement that it has been filed, because, you know, and you're allowed to make announcements like that, and then it'll be up to NIST to post it to their website, thus making it a public document.
Great, great. Is there anything else we didn't cover? Do you want to?
I think we have. I think we have covered what we can do with clarity in this program, James. I can tell you that you know, if subsequent developments occur, then, you know, from a legal point of view, I can talk about developments, you know, after they occur, but, you know, I can't use a forum like this as a way to present a case.
Sure.
And use it to discuss developments
that have already been filed.
As they happen. So I would like to think that you know, we'll be able to do that again or as and when new developments occur. You know, certainly would be very pleased to be invited back to do that. And I think that we've certainly given your listeners an update, and hopefully have provided some information with some degree of clarity, letting them know that Dr. Judy Wood's theory is taken seriously in official governmental circles, and that theory is going to be further developed.
That's great. Thanks. Thanks for coming on.
Good to speak with you, James. Thank you.
Good night. Bye. And that was Attorney Jerry Liepart, who is working with several plaintiffs filing a request for correction with NIST, part of the U.S. Department of Commerce there.